Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet from AirAmerica.com. And of course, on radio stations all over the country as well. We're going to be bouncing around between guests and your calls. I've got a couple of stories I'd like to tell you about what happened yesterday. We'll get to those in a few minutes. It's going to be a wild ride, as this convention has been. Our number, 866-303-2270, toll-free. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. I'll get in there shortly, probably during the next break. And AirAmerica.com as well. I think in fact, our camera is even running. So if you go to TomHartman.com or AirAmerica.com, you can click on the Tom Vision. Congressman Michael Capuano. Am I pronouncing that right, Congressman?
Very good.
Yeah, thank you. Is with me. He's a U.S. Congressman from the 8th District of Massachusetts. That would be basically Boston.
Boston, Cambridge,
or Boston.
Boston. Okay. However you want.
You know, I just did an hour with Carl Wolfson, who does our morning show on KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. And I saw last night, I had 4 hours sleep night before last and was in here at 6 o'clock yesterday morning, and I did 4 hours of radio, and then I did a debate with Dennis Prager, and then I moderated a panel with Arianna Huffington and John Podesta. And by the end of the day, I just couldn't do it. You know, I went back to the hotel, and I said, I'll watch it from... And in part, I wanted to see the Fox pool coverage. And I thought, you know, the thought that was going through my mind was, is this just me or is this real? What I was watching when I was watching the Fox pool coverage last night, and for our listeners who don't know what pool coverage is, the way that they do it and the way that they've been doing it for about a decade now, I think, is that one network shoots all the photographs on the floor, and then they feed that to all the other networks. And it's a luck of the draw, it rotates, and this year it's Fox. And when I asked Carl Wolfson, who's, you know, a knowledgeable talk show, and Christine Alexander, who's on with him, you know, you guys watched it there in Portland. What did you see? Carl's comment, and I don't remember his exact words, so I'll paraphrase him because it was essentially my experience, was that virtually every cutaway shot was somebody who was bored, somebody who was talking to the person next to them, somebody who was clearly distracted, somebody who was frowning. And when Michelle Obama was speaking, in particular, we saw that, and that there, what I think many, across the board, many Democrats, many Americans, and certainly if the Republicans were running this, what they would have wanted to see, when you've got a historic African-American figure up there, is not just African-American faces smiling, but white faces smiling. There was virtually none of that. And I'm going, is this Roger Ailes, like, you know, laughing himself silly? Am I crazy? And I got, you know, I was talking to Carl and Christine this morning, and Christine was like, you could make that into a drinking game. It was like, where's the next person frowning? You know, it's not just minority, but I mean, just right across the board. I thought it was terrible. I'm sure you didn't see it. You were probably
I didn't see it. But why are you surprised?
Well, I guess, yeah. Okay, good point. Good point. I just thought that they would at least fake it, that they were doing it well.
Look, National Fox is very good at what they do. And, you know, they're pretty obvious about some things, but they're also very good at the subtleties.
Yeah. You know, that's what this was.
And they do it all the time. And honestly, on a lot of their talk shows, they refuse to invite on those people that will ever go back at them.
Right.
They want only people from the left, which is where I'm from, who are nice.
Yeah.
As opposed to some of us who are a little bit more aggressive about our beliefs. And
well, and if they can find somebody who's 19 years old and only semi-coherent and has hair down to their shoulders, they're, you know, bang. Well, let's put that person.
And they want to take the most extreme amongst us and present them as the mainstream left,
right,
which is ridiculous. And they do it all the time. It's not new. And
Carl pointed out to me that Roger Ailes, in 1968, got his start in politics producing town halls for Richard Nixon.
That's right.
And he would go out of his way, and there's a book about this, actually. He'd go out of his way to always have an African-American on the town hall, you know, and get the photos. He'd out of, you know, women. I mean, he would try to create the illusion of diversity at the exact same time that in the back channel, he was running Nixon's Southern Strategy, where they were trying to destroy diversity. They were trying to crush the civil rights movement.
Right.
They were trying to stop the women's rights movement. And so, anyway, I don't know if any of our listeners saw the same thing. It'd be interesting. You know, we'll pick up calls as we go on through the show. But so what's your takeaway from last night? It looked to me like it was electric. Ted Kennedy and Michelle Obama, the high points.
I thought it was a good beginning. I think that, you know, I mean, the first night of any convention is always supposed to be, I think, introductory.
Yeah.
And I think Ted Kennedy was a little different because obviously we all know what the struggles he's going through right now.
Yeah.
It was a little bit, you know, nice for Ted, but it was also, I think, nice for a lot of us who've been active in the Democratic Party for a long time. He provides us an opportunity to remember where we've come from as well as where we want to go. And Michelle Obama, obviously, I think was a great introduction to both her and her husband. I mean, I think she's got an opportunity last night to begin the process, or to continue the process, I guess is a better way to put it, of putting aside some of the more difficult public relations issues that have happened during the campaign, to get her a little bit closer to us, and to introduce her husband. I think there's nobody better to do it than a long-term spouse.
That was, in my opinion, and this is not because it's now and it's not all the exceptionalism that's all the exceptional circumstances associated with this from being the first African American, anything.
Right.
That was the best spouse speech I have ever heard in my life. That was, she was
very good.
She was so eloquent. I mean, she was just, it was, watching on TV, it blew me away. I mean, just because Nancy Pelosi, who preceded her, you know, and others who preceded her, they were reading the prompter. They were talking slow because they were hearing the feedback in the room. You know,
right.
they were talking the way you talk to a crowd. Michelle Obama did it the way you talk on television. She did it right, and she did it the way you talk actually to a small group of people. I mean, sitting in my hotel room last night, I got the feeling that I was in the room with her. That this was a personal and intimate thing, and it just, you know, it was so genuine.
Which is very difficult to do when you're in front of 10,000, you know, screaming supporters. I mean, it's very difficult. It takes a fair amount of practice and an incredible amount of poise.
Yes, yes, and poise in particular, all the practice as well. And yeah, absolutely. I was just, I was very, very, very impressed. So, hang on just a second here. My computer's yelling at me. We're talking with Congressman Michael Capuano, who is the 8th District. He represents the 8th District of Massachusetts, Boston, Chelsea, Somerville. Right?
Yep. And Cambridge.
And Cambridge. There you go. And what are, as Click and Black say, our fair city. what are the areas that you're most involved with?
Substantive areas?
Yeah.
Financial services, transportation, those are two committees I'm on. The speaker's had me do a fair amount of things. She had me in charge of her transition. She had me do some of the ethics work that we've done in the last year or so.
Can we talk about financial services for a minute?
Sure.
There was in the minute and a half or so we have left, there was a report, I believe it was yesterday, that several hundred banks have now been put on the FDIC watch list.
I didn't see the report yesterday. I was traveling here.
Okay. What's your sense of the condition of the American banking system? Are we looking at the possibility of a 1929 event?
I don't think so, but I mean, there are still some difficulties to be seen. I think we're better off than that, not the least of which we have a lot of laws and a lot of backup financial and capitalization aspects, FDIC being a classic one, to prevent that.
Right. But a number of those have been gotten rid of by the Republicans in the last decade.
Some, but not as much, and that's why we're shaky, honestly.
Glass-Steagall Act, for example.
Are gone. But at the same time, we still have a fair number of them left. They didn't get rid of everything.
Yeah.
And actually, we're in the problem because of that, because the term regulation has become a swear word. It's never a discussion about, well, what's a reasonable amount of regulation, which I think is a fair discussion. There's no one answer to that. But in the last 20 years, it's been regulation is bad, government is evil.
Right.
And therefore, we've allowed Wall Street to, not Wall Street, allow a handful of people on Wall Street to abuse the system and has caused, in my opinion, this economic crisis. And that could have been avoided if we had people who understood that human nature being what it is, greed sometimes will overtake common sense and fairness. And again, it's a very small number of people who cause the problem that we have. But in competitive world, if you break the rules and you go 10 miles beyond where the line should be, either I have to do something to kind of keep up with you, or I will fall by the wayside.
You know, it used to be the directors and officers were held responsible for the behavior of corporations. Now it's the stockholders who get the hit.
Yeah, well, and they don't even get the hit often enough. In the right circumstances, the taxpayers will end up getting the hit because we allow these things to get too big until we get to the point where we... You're then looking at, well, it's not so much stockholders, it's now, do you want the entire capitalistic system to go under?
That's right.
Or do you have to jump in? And unfortunately, we've been forced to jump in a couple of times in the last several years that we shouldn't have got to that point.
And in the meantime, the CEOs are laughing all over the bank.
Absolutely.
Congressman Michael Capuano is website house.gov/CAPUANO. Thank you, Congressman,
Thanks, Tom,
being with us. Great to meet you today. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. We'll be back. 866-303-2270.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Shore to shore. After a soldier fights, should we read him his new rights? There's not that many to read anymore. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for?
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on radio live. Where's from Denver, the DNC. Let's pick up your phone calls on this. I'm curious what your take was in particular on the pool coverage, on what you saw on television last night. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Al in Sherman Oaks, California. You're on the air, Al.
Hey, I'm a client. Shock doctor.
Hey, Al.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
I watched it too last night, and I was totally upset. I noticed that when Michelle Obama was giving her speech, the shots that they would put on the TV. I had two TVs. I watched Fox, which was outrageous. But I also say that NBC didn't do as effective a job.
Well, NBC was getting their feed from Fox.
Well, it irked me to millions, and I just said that...
So what upset you about it, Al?
Pardon me?
What upset you about it?
Well, it upset me because Obama's appealing to all of us, not just to minorities. He's appealing to Americans. And her speech was so eloquent and had such an emotional tinge and a substantive tinge to it that when you listened, you could relate. And I could not imagine how anyone listening to that speech could not relate to what she was saying. And then I hear this comment by this Fox reporter saying that her speech was very good, but she lost an opportunity to hit the issues. That, to me, was so asinine
That's not her job.
Exactly. Yeah. She was essentially portraying herself as a person and as a family in America that really identifies with American problems, that they're working together.
Absolutely. Al, spot on. I got to move along here, but I thought this was an absolutely brilliant speech. It was one of the most brilliant speeches I've ever heard. But the pool coverage, I was frankly concerned with, and I rode in here on the bus with an African American woman, and she commented on it. I don't know. Maybe I'm being hypersensitive. Speaking of hypersensitive, just real quickly, yesterday I was moderating this panel. I've been saying all along, sexism is more potent than racism in America. and because it's less understood, it's more subtle, it's more a part of, I think, all of us. And so I'm introducing this panel. I introduced John Podesta and David Sirota and Paul Krugman. And Arianna Huffington shows up late, a couple minutes late. She comes in and sits down next to me, and she was wearing this great cologne. I mean, it just knocked me out. I was like, that's great. And so, you know, I turned to her and with a hot mic, and I said, you smell great. Incredible, you know. It's something you just don't do. I mean, my Chris Matthews moment, my sexist moment, I apologize. Anyway, Scott in North Conway, New Hampshire. Hey, Scott.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
I've been watching the coverage of this election process for a long time, and I think last night was particularly terrible. All the networks, whether it was the No Shoot or the commentary, but this is all a part of a media plan or attempt to keep this election going. It is in their profit.
Absolutely. Well, that's Scott. That's where the horse race comes in. That's where they trash candidates when they get up and they build them up when they get down. They're driving the horse race. But you know, the fact of the matter is that political conventions are showcases, and I think that they serve an important function. Is it Manica in Napa Valley?
Marika.
Marika, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time reading the screen here.
Hey Tom, Marika, you have many, many fans in the Napa Valley. We think you're terrific.
Well, thank you.
I wonder, how is it that Fox got that pool coverage, and are they the only ones who are going to have pool coverage for the entire convention?
Yes, they have it for the whole convention, and it rotates every 4 years, and it just came up as theirs this time
around.
So.
I too was watching Michelle Obama's speech, which I thought was unbelievably wonderful and intimate, and I was so angry that they kept showing, I couldn't believe that not everyone was engaged in it to begin with.
Right.
But
yeah, half of their cutaway shots were to people who looked like they were bored or they were talking to the person next to them. And if you just added up the cutaway shots, you get the impression that 80% of the people in the audience were African-American or minorities.
Well, how could Fox get this for the Democratic National Convention? I don't understand that.
Sometimes you think that the people running the DNC just, you know, they're still playing checkers while the rest of the world is playing chess. Certainly while Fox and the Roger Ailes and all those guys. Marika, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. We're gonna take a break now, and we'll be back. We're gonna pick up a couple of guests here, and we'll also be interspersing your phone calls throughout the show over the next 3 hours, 2.5 hours. So stick around. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, and there's a link to Tom Vision, to our live video feed. Hey. And also AirAmerica.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Past the hour, Tom Hartmann here with you, broadcasting live from Denver from the Democratic National Convention. And Bob Borisage is sitting here with me, the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. And fill in your bio a little bit for me here, Bob. I don't have the cheat sheet in front of me.
The campaign is a center of progressive ideas and organizing. We help build the coalition that beat Bush on privatization, and we just launched the coalition that's going to do health care for Americans now.
Yeah, and a fine thing it is. What's your take on what's going on so far here at the convention?
Well, I think you see the process of Democrats coming together and this stark divide between what course we're going to follow as a nation. And it's starting, I think you'll see for the first time, Americans will start to see not just a referendum on Barack Obama, but a choice between where McCain wants to take the country and where Obama wants to take the country. And if they see that choice, that will certainly help the Democratic ticket.
I think increasingly the Republicans are trying to make it a choice between what is perceived by many white Republicans and swing voters, particularly in the Middle West states, as us versus them, particularly at the issue of race. I see this. I thought I was hallucinating last night. I mean, I thought I was being hypersensitive in watching the pool coverage and watching all the cutaways to either upset faces, upset white faces, or smiling African American faces. And it's like, where are the smiling faces, smiling white faces, frankly? I mean, it's just even that you would expect. And I know this is like really tough stuff to talk about. You know, we're treading in very light ground. But I just, and my co-host this morning in KPOJ noticed the same thing. In fact, both of them did. Nancy in Venice, California, as she's calling in.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy. You're on with me and Bob Borisage.
Thank you. I totally agree with you. I watched C-SPAN last night. I'm an African American, and I'm a little sensitive myself, personally, on all conventions and how many times they cut to a minority face and a Caucasian American face. And I was like, I was like, what's going on? What, they keep cutting to the same minorities, and then the few white faces that they showed, they weren't exactly as you described. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, they weren't smiling. They were talking. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't know that this was Fox related. I was just like, what's going on? And I'm so glad that you said something. Another thing is, I'm very interested in what you were doing yesterday. I'm not too computer savvy, and I was wondering if you have your work from yesterday on the computer.
Yeah, Sue, if you go to tomhartman.com, Sue puts up Sue's daily notes. She runs our chat room and does all kinds of great stuff. And so there's usually a pretty good transcript, not necessarily a transcript, but a pretty good trail of who we covered and what we did.
Oh, right.
So just go to tomhartman.com. It's right there on the homepage. Nancy, got to move along. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bob, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I saw some of the C-SPAN coverage. I didn't see a lot of the pool coverage. But I did think that, for the most part, there weren't a lot of dry eyes in the House last night when Michelle Obama told her story.
You wouldn't have known that from the pool coverage, though. I'm
really?
Telling you.
Because certainly on the C-SPAN stuff, when they switched to black and white women, particularly, there were a lot of tears in the audience, and that was a true reflection of what was going on in the auditorium. It was a very moving speech about a story that's really an all-American story and is a stark contrast, really, with the family values of the McCain family. So I thought it was an extraordinary occasion.
Yeah, I had it, you know. Mike in San Francisco, your thoughts, Mark?
Good morning, Tom. I'm really glad you're having this discussion because I think it should have been brought up months ago when it was announced that the pool coverage was going to be Fox, so that we were aware of and we had this ability to analyze what we were watching last night. My impression was, I may be mistaken, but I thought that the C-SPAN coverage and the pool coverage from the other networks was exactly the same. I thought that C-SPAN didn't do any. I mean, they cover more, but I thought it was the same pool coverage, it looked like to me.
I frankly don't know, but it may well be. But your sense of it was the same as what I carried away.
But I thought it was. But anyway, so I couldn't stand what I was. I was so bored with what I was watching. The impression I got was the Democrats are losers. They don't care. They haven't warmed up. It was all negative responses to this wonderful thing I was watching.
Right, based on the cutaway shots.
Yeah. Based on what I was watching. My sister is a delegate there. This morning I talked to her. She was telling me how wonderful an event it was. And my impression from watching it on television last night was lackluster boredom.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mike. I'm telling you, Bob, at least... My recollection, and of course, reality is skewed, but my recollection was at least a third of the cutaway shots were people who were talking to the person next to them, who were bored, who were looking up at the ceiling, it was everything but pick your nose. I mean, it was like, let's find somebody who looks like they really don't want to be here and put the camera on them. And it was pretty astounding.
Well, as somebody who was on the floor rather than seeing the coverage, I can attest that this was part of Democrats really coming together and getting excited. Michelle Obama gave an extraordinary speech. She told an extraordinary story about an American family, with a father who with multiple sclerosis would get up every day to go to work to support his family and who drove his kids to go to
what
college.
What she did
and so
was what I think Fox was trying to undo with their pool coverage last night, if my conspiracy theory is right. And I'll be the first to admit that I may be crazy on this. But I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and my dad worked in a tool and die shop, and most of my friends were white, blue collar, middle class, and many of them didn't know anybody who was African American. I mean, this is in the 50s and 60s, you know.
Sure.
And it was. I know that the thing that the Republicans don't want us to the message that they don't want those folks in Michigan that I grew up with to get. Is that Barack and Michelle Obama are absolutely the same as you and me, as right across the board, right as middle class America, as white America, it doesn't matter that we're all just people here, and that's the last thing that the Republicans want. We're still seeing Nixon's Southern Strategy playing out that was started by Roger Ailes, who's the president of Fox News.
Right, right, no question.
So I'm just amazed. Mark in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Mark, you're on the air with Tom and Bob Borisov.
Hey, Tom and Bob. From Tom and Bob that I'm used to hearing in Indianapolis. I got to tell you, Tom, you are not being hypersensitive. I was. This is the first time I've called into a show, and the reason why is because I watched the pool coverage last night, and I was ignorant of the fact that it switches between different networks, but I could tell it was all the same feed. And so I thought that it was the DNC doing it. And I said, what the heck is wrong with them? I thought, why are they continuing to portray Barack Obama as a black-only candidate? And I couldn't figure it out at all. And I was also, frankly, very disappointed. I flipped between MSNBC and CNN mostly because I couldn't stomach Fox at all. But I was very disappointed at the way CNN actually framed the whole thing. They framed the whole thing as, did the Democrats blow the first day? That was their whole thing, as opposed to... and then they brought on, basically, Hillary Clinton's people, which I understand the Bagala and Caravilla are...
Mark, I'm sorry, your phone, I think it must be a cell phone, but your phone is breaking up pretty badly. But I got your point. And then the big thing that they're looking for, this is the front page of the New York Times today, or at least the electronic version, the number one, not one number one story, one of the main ones is, you know, Hillary's disaffected. I've probably talked to 30, 40 delegates on this floor, and at least half of whom were Hillary delegates. I mean, there's a lot of them here. And all of them are gung-ho for Obama. I have yet to find, an angry Hillary delegate.
Well, the Times did a poll of Hillary delegates that they printed in that same article, and it had, like, I think it was 6% said they might not support Obama. I mean, it's a joke, right?
Yeah.
This is all being built out of nothing. And part of it is a Republican message strategy.
You bet.
The Republicans who had Hillary as Brunhilde for so many years, the wicked rich. With a tail, suddenly she's the saint who's been besmirched, and they're rallying to her side. I actually think this is all kind of nonsense politics, though. I don't think Americans are going to buy that, and I do hope that the story that Michelle Obama told about her life and Barack's life really broke through to Americans, because you're right, that this is a story about people living the American dream, really. Parents sacrificing so their children can make it, their children working very hard.
No, I guarantee all of our listeners got that. And and I think that what we need to be doing is progressive people who already, we're the choir. We need to be pointing out how the anti-choir is playing against us. And I just, I find it very interesting. Sharon in West Virginia.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Sharon.
Thank you for taking
a minute before the break. Yeah.
Okay. Basically, just reiterating what your last several callers have said. I mean, I was watching the cutaways and people looking like they were asleep. And this morning, as I was getting ready to come to work, I had CNN on, and everybody is, all the talking heads are talking about how the Democrats blew it. And this is why I listened to your show. I was not aware of the fact that Fox was doing the camera feed, and now it all makes sense. So I'll let you go, and thank you very much for all the work you're doing.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. Bob, you're an old hand at this stuff. We have 30 seconds. It's not enough, but how do we fight back against this?
Well, I think part of it is what you're doing. It's revealing it, so people are aware that this is a conscious and concerted conspiracy, really, to try to shape news coverage. And part of it is to retell the stories. It's a great story, and it needs to be retold over and over again.
Yeah, very well said. Bob Borisaj, Our Future, the Campaign for America's Future. And any other affiliations you want to...
Chair of the Progressive Majority Board.
Trying to build a progressive majority
at the state and local level.
Well done. Bob, thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Okay. This one's for you, Barack Obama. At first I was ahead. I was satisfied. Didn't think that you could win, that you were too unqualified. But I spent oh so many days working on that campaign trail. Did you think I'd fail, that I'd give up? State to come, I'll wipe away your silly grin. 'Cause in the state that's called delusion, I thought that I would win. You think I'll go walk out the door? Just turn around.
See, I'm telling you, the corporate media in this country will do anything to keep from talking about the fact that the corporate media is part of the corporatocracy, this relatively small ruling elite that basically controls. And no, this is not a conspiracy theory. Look at any industry. Talk to any entrepreneur who's tried to start a business in the last 20 years. In any industry, you've got a handful of very massive, in many cases, multinational corporations who control basically every industry. And the bottom line for them is squeeze all the blood out of the middle class that they can. And that's what's going on. And the corporate media does not want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about health care. They don't want to talk about the fact that Social Security will be solvent for the next 75 years if we simply lift the cap so that Bill Gates pays the same amount in Social Security taxes as you and me. I'm on a rant here. And you all know the song. Jeff in Tacoma. Let's pick up some calls. Stay, Jeff.
Hey, Tom, great to hear from you. I wanted to let everybody know that the Internet still hasn't caught up with this story. You're ahead of the game as usual. I'd like to encourage anybody who has a blogging account, who goes on Daily Cost, whatever, to please explain what's happening. Because so often bloggers spend all their time talking about the content of the speeches, and they ignore stuff like this, which is the real political reality, which is at the...
Well, I'm in the media, so this stuff is just so visible to me, you know. And, you know, my last book, Cracking the Code, is all about subliminal communication and how, you know, the sub cues and all this kind of stuff. And so did you see the same thing I saw? I mean, did you get the same sense?
Absolutely. And it really pissed me off because that was probably the best speech I've ever heard.
Yes.
You know, it was real.
It absolutely was.
It was like being in her living room and having her pour out her heart to you. I wanted to give her a hug, you know.
Yeah.
That's how good it was. And for Fox News to get away with this without Democrats crying foul, it's shame on us. And so I think everybody who has a blogging account, everybody who can write a letter to the editor to please bring this up, because the mainstream of society will not get it unless they are pounded it into their head that we are being given a false impression of our own convention.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you very much. Amy in Maryland. Hey, Amy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, great. Okay, I just wanted to sort of put a positive story, but I would be the first one to talk about right-wing media bias, but ever since MSNBC put on Rachel Maddow, I'm glued to them. And
yeah.
I don't know if they
Isn't
have
she
the
great?
Same speed, but I just remember Keith Olbermann talking about all the crying women he saw in the audience.
Yeah, because he was here. See, he was physically here. When I talk to the people who were here, they're like, last night was out of the park, and it was incredible, and it was amazing, and it was, and when I talk to people who saw it on TV, they're like, you know, it seemed to be a lot of people yawning, you know, not yawning, but
yeah, I wonder if it was the same feed, because I think he was taught. I mean, I think they showed a lot of crying women.
Yeah, they did. This wasn't 100%. But it was enough that shouldn't have been, in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. I didn't see the other ones, and I don't know if they all have the same feet or not. But
yeah.
But, okay.
It's fascinating time. Thanks, Amy. Good to hear from you. Is it Lone or Eon in Lake Oswego?
No, it's Ione, but my friend calls me Eon. I don't know if Mike, who called you earlier, saw the same thing that I saw, because I watched C-SPAN last night, and it was, I saw all the crying women and all the, I don't know, maybe I'm getting colorblind, because I just noticed that there were people that were moved, like Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I saw some crying women, too, and maybe... I don't think so, but maybe I'm overreacting. I don't know, but I own. Thank you. Thanks for weighing in on that. Let's Dan in Aurora, Colorado. Speaking of Colorado,
hi.
Hey Dan.
Hi Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Are you there?
I am. Rats. I just dumped Dan. Dan, I'm very sorry. This is not the computer I normally use. Let's go to Kat in Huntington Beach, California. Dan, try and give us a call back. Hey Kat.
Hi Tom, how are you?
Just fine. What's up?
I watched a little C-SPAN, and CNN was just horrific. But MSNBC with Keith Olbermann and Chris, it was out of the park. They were.
Well, their commentary was brilliant.
Yeah. And they did show. I mean, after I started watching from Carolyn Kennedy on, and I was just crying my little heart out.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I came away with their coverage being the best.
MSNBC, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what we found, thank you, Kat, and what we found is thanks a lot for the call. Oops, somehow this button just got locked down again. And in Portland, for example, you can no longer get MSNBC, and in Pittsburgh, you can no longer get MSNBC unless you pay extra for the premium channels. So, very strange. Bill in Seminole, Florida. Bill, we'll get just a half a minute here before we have to wrap up this hour.
Okay.
You're on the air, Bill.
I'm so sorry. I have to tell you, you were right about this. I think that your guest Bob missed the point when he thought that this was not a big deal. You're nailing this, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that you're saying stuff like this. Do you know who's doing the pool coverage for the Republicans?
I don't.
That would be a really good thing to find out.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure
even
half Ann
Curry
people,
was
email,
asking
email.
Question after question about Hillary after speakers were coming down off the podium last night. We switched to C-SPAN. It was much, much better.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing that the folks in our chat room will track this down because they're really good at doing that kind of stuff fast. Bill, I'm sure by the end of the show we'll know who's doing the full coverage for the RNC. The Teddy Kennedy... Oh, man, that was wonderful. Michelle Obama, one of the best, certainly the best spouse speech ever, one of the best speeches ever. Pool coverage sucked. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. From the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
6 minutes past the hour in the second hour of our program. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the DNC in Colorado. And Thomas Buffenbarger is with me. He's the international president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Hey, welcome, Thomas.
Good to be on your show, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome, President Buffenbarger.
Wow, that sounds ominous.
You were, I'm assuming, on the floor last night.
I was on the floor last night watching the proceedings, listening to the speakers, and enjoying a good opening to the Democratic Convention.
Okay. And your sense of how everything went, it seemed to me like,
knocked
that out of the park.
I think it went very well yesterday. This is my sixth convention, a little different opening, but probably the one I've enjoyed the most.
Interesting. So you've seen a bunch of these.
Yes, I have.
That's fascinating. I'd like to talk about the state of labor with you for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because, you know, one of the things that the Republicans want to make sure everybody is talking about is whether or not Hillary Clinton's people are unhappy, or whether or not Michelle Obama, you know, smiled enough or whatever. But, you know, really what we've got in America is a middle class that is vanishing at a precipitous rate. And about the only thing standing astride, to paraphrase William F. Buckley, oddly enough, standing astride the arc of history shouting stop, are the labor unions.
That's right. Somebody's got to do it. And we have had a very long and...
Flip us over to Comrex.
What's up?
We just...
Hello.
Board is... We just lost the power.
Hello, hello. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. I can hear you. I just can't hear me.
Here, we just went down. Try that one.
Is my mic still hot? It's, I don't know. Well, let's continue, and let's just assume that
sure.
We're on the air here,
well,
Tom.
Well, I wish when we had a state of labor in America, we would have good governance, and the people who work hard every day would see the what the government can do for them. But
yeah.
Here we are in the United States today, on the verge of a historic election. We need to make a correction to the course of this great ship, and we intend to do that when Barack Obama becomes the President of the United States.
Okay. It's going to take, though, more than just making Barack Obama president. It seems to me that that's the day, not that the work ends, but that the day the work begins. If you look at Franklin Roosevelt came to office in the election of 1932. He ran as Casper Milquetoast. He ran as I'm not Herbert Hoover. Basically, he had, you know, he didn't lay out a progressive vision for America. He didn't lay out what the New Deal was going to be. He was arguably pushed into that. He got it that the American people, that the parade was marching down the street, and he damn well better get out in front of it with a flag. And you know, Teddy Roosevelt did the same thing. It took him a couple of years of his presidency to figure it out, but he did the same thing. And I'd say Lyndon Johnson, the guy who had spent his entire life fighting civil rights. I mean, here was the, you know, just famously racist cracker from the South who got it, who figured it out and turned everything around. We have to, as workers in America, as citizens in the United States, we have to push our elected officials to say we do want to have card check, we do want to have the Employee Free Choice Act, we do want to have strong labor.
Well, let's go back to your description of the previous presidents, Teddy and Franklin and Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
All were, in a funny kind of way, accidental presidents. And they emerged in our nation's darkest hours to offer the kind of leadership and the inspiring vision the American people were desperately looking for. And today, the American people are desperately looking for someone who will challenge them and gives them a vision and an aspiration to work toward. And that's why we have to make Barack Obama the President of the United States. We know we're headed down the wrong road. The people want to turn it around. They want to leave the kind of legacy that they found themselves in, a hope and opportunity for the future of their own children and generations beyond. We have great challenges before us. We need a president that will articulate those challenges and then put us to work. And that's what we want to do in America. We want to work, we want to earn our way, and we want to make it a better place, and certainly leave it that way.
We're talking with Thomas Buffenbarger. He is the international president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. I've had a number of conservatives on my show. I debate them routinely, who are going off on, and there's some very effective, frankly, advertising. It's being done mostly at the state level, but it's being done all over the country, saying you want your vote to be private. The union bosses, here you are, the union bosses are going to intimidate you. And this is a meme, a thought virus that is actually catching some traction. And one of my callers shared with me an observation, and I've made it a mission to try and share it with every labor leader that I find, of how to turn this around and flip it back at them. These guys say, you want your vote to be private. Yes, you know, I'd like my vote to be private. What we're talking about with card check is not a vote. What we're talking about with card check is registering to vote. And the way to flip this around is to say to those conservatives, oh, you think that... that you don't want me, how would you feel if I showed up to vote for president and I wasn't registered to vote? And when I register to vote, should I be secret? Should nobody know who I am or how I'm registering? And, you know, obviously the answer is no. And if the labor union, if the labor movement could overnight reinvent the Employee Free Choice Act and card check as voter registration rather than as voting, you could completely blow down this right-wing thing that I'm telling you is starting to take down card check.
I think we need card check registration in a big way. As a way for the American worker to express their sentiments and make a determination on what's best for their lives. But if that fails, if the right wing succeeds in destroying the purity of that proposal, then I think we should adopt one of their tactics. Since the right wing really believes the best form of government is a deregulated government, that the best form of an economy is a deregulated economy, and look at all the things we've deregulated today, sure. And let's look how successfully it's working. Transportation, oil and gas, telephone rates, insurance rates, everything's been deregulated. I think it's time we deregulate the other factor of the economic equation, and that's let's deregulate the labor movement. If we can't have sensible laws that allow people to express themselves and to form and join unions like every other nation on the earth has, even in communist China, then let's take this deregulated capitalism to the fullest extent we can. Let's deregulate the labor movement, and if we want to go back to the laws of the jungle, which management seems to want to take us to, I think we ought to meet them there.
If we still had reasonable trade policies, I would absolutely agree with you. You know, because from the founding of this country until Reagan came into office, we had an average 40% import on a tariff on imports, and it's average 2% right now. And in my opinion, a lot of the reason for that had nothing to do with trade. It had to do with busting labor in the United States. We're talking with Thomas Buffenbarger. He is the president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. My dad worked 40 years at a tool and die shop in Lansing, Michigan.
My trade, tool and die.
Yeah, but my recollection is that the union that he was, it wasn't called, Aerospace Workers wasn't in the name at that time. Or am I just misremembering?
Well,
I always remembered it also as
the
FLCIO.
It was about 1956 we added the term Aerospace Workers to it.
Oh,
and,
okay.
But this union is an old union. It's 120 years old this year, and we've been around since our foundation on the railroads back in 1888. And now today, when you see that space shuttle launch, that's an IAM member making that possible. So we have covered the whole history of our nation in transportation, manufacturing, and services, and defense of the United States of America.
Yeah, well, the IAM is a great union. I'm telling you, Dad, yeah, I mean, he... when he died, his house was paid off, single salary. He raised four boys. You know, it put some of us through school to the extent that, you know, we could function. And Mom is still alive. She still has a pension. I mean, you know,
isn't that what America's supposed to
be? He had health care right up until the day he died.
He earned every bit of that.
You bet.
For you and your family.
You bet. And that's the thing that Americans just are not getting. Alex, I'm gonna turn my game up a whole bunch here because I'm not hearing time cues. I'm not hearing music. There we go. Okay. So we have about a minute left, I'm guessing.
Sure.
So in that minute, what do people who are not members of labor unions, which is now tragically the majority of American workers, what do they do to support the labor movement and support the labor movement's efforts to bring back the middle class?
They should get to know the labor movement a little bit and maybe follow our lead in this election, because the advantage we have is the ability to communicate and interact with a large block of voters out there.
Yeah.
And the labor movement does a great job on delivering the message to the voters, our members. If you don't belong to a union, listen to that union message, because it's your benefit, your concern, your well-being we're concerned about too. We want to raise everyone's vote. We want to give everybody the access to opportunity in this country. We helped make that opportunity possible. Now we're fighting to keep it alive. So help us, and I think we'll have a great turnout on Election Day in 2008.
Thomas Buffenbarger is International President of the IAM, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Take a break at 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
It's live radio. Alex, put your headphones on. Do you notice we've one of those two streams? No, it's coming. It's what's coming back from the board. You pot it back up, and Chris, what you're feeding us from the board is my own audio coming back, not mix minus. So I'm hearing an echo with a half second delay, which will make me crazy. But we'll continue it. Alex, you need to turn it back up again because I need to hear the callers. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Boy, it's hard to talk when you're hearing yourself. John in Issaquah, Washington. Hey, John, what's up?
John from Issaquah?
Yeah. Yeah, it's you.
Yeah, okay. The reason I'm calling is I like to see the Democrats, you know, really go after the Republicans in their advertisement. And the advertisement that I would like to see the Democrats put out would go something like this, to show McCain and probably Romney and show their net worth with a caption that says something like, which one of, do you think these candidates have you in mind, when they show their net worth, and then you could relate your own net worth.
Well, it's not just their net worth, John. It's also, if you look at Mitt Romney, you know, much of his money came from buying companies, firing workers, just dumping them wholesale, getting rid of people, and you know, basically, you know, pump and dump. I mean, you know, so it's I think that's something. I'd rather highlight their behavior, frankly, than I would their wealth or their personality. Although I do think that this, how many houses do you have, how many kitchen tables do you have, I think that this is getting some traction. Steve in Albany, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I wanted to call in and say basically that, you know, the feeds from the different, I don't think we can blame everything, the coverage on Fox News, because I was watching the convention on the internet last night, and there's many feeds that you can look at yourself just on the internet. I was watching C-SPAN and CNN, and the networks, you know, are making their own choices as to what they show from those choice of feeds.
And no, they're not. The agreement that the networks have is that there will be one network, and this is all the networks get together and they basically work this out, that there will be one network that decides to carry. Alex, I'll do my headphone thing. Is that there will be one network that carries everything, and Alex, pop that back up. Oh, it is. Okay, great. That will carry everything, and that, you know, they all go along with it. So right now, the entire feed is coming from Fox, and the other networks have really no choice in that.
But they have more than one camera, and they're choosing what they show their own audience. Because last night, when I was watching, simultaneously, I was watching four feeds from CNN and one from C-SPAN.
Right.
And the internet, the ones on the internet don't have as much commentary, for one, which is nice. But when I was watching the main feed for CNN, which is the one that's closest to what you see on television, when the Republican congressman came out and started talking, they started doing replays of Nancy Pelosi.
Oh,
and
that's interesting.
The only reason I knew that the Republican congressman was actually speaking is because I had C-SPAN up at the same time.
That's interesting, because I had several people this morning tell me that there was this Republican congressman who did this just incredible job, and I didn't see it last night. And I watched from the time Nancy Pelosi started until the end. I was sort of half watching and half, you know, doing email and internet stuff and talking to my wife on the phone, and, you know, kind of in between events and things, but. Wow, I didn't realize that they didn't even run that. That's terrible.
No.
Steve, thank you very much for that. Tamara in Joplin, Missouri. Hey, Tamara.
Good morning, Tom. Hello, chat room. Tom, I'm calling to comment about what I saw on C-SPAN this morning.
Mm-hmm.
They had panned to where some idiots had painted on the side of the mountain there in Denver, Democrats kill unborn children, and highlighted it in DNC. And I really hope they catch them, they make them clean it up, but the environmental impact on the lichen and the moss that the animals eat will take years to regrow. And I also have a comment to the people that painted it. They say that we kill unborn children. Well, I say the Republican Party kills uninsured children when their president vetoes insuring more children under under our current health care system.
Yeah, Tamara, well said and spot on. Thank you very much. Incredible. We have just a minute here before the break. Dan in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to Denver.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the coverage of the convention, and my question is, you know, of course, Democrats always figure it after the fact, but, you know, why don't they put out their own pool? Why don't they control it? You know, even if it costs them $1 million or $2 million, it would be worth every penny. They're going to spend more than that on commercials just during this week.
Yeah.
And they could control it, and, you know, they would get the exact impression they want. They would be able to make it. You know, it's the largest commercial in the whole season for them, the convention.
Absolutely agree that the DNC should take control of this. They should have some say in what's going on out there rather than just turning it all over to Roger Ailes. It's just absolutely creepy to think that Roger Ailes is controlling what we're all seeing. 27, and all that said, boy, those were two great speeches last night. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Congresswoman Allison Schwartz is with us, a member of Congress from the 13th District of Pennsylvania, serving her second term in the House of Representatives. Oh, you don't need to wear them. That's okay.
I don't need that.
Yeah,
good.
We can just talk.
We can do that. That's good. All right, great.
Leading health care executive in Philadelphia prior to signing on for Congress, right?
And while I was in the state Senate for 14 years before Congress, so had a little bit of time in between.
Oh, my. Yeah. So what's happening? I'm assuming then healthcare is one of your major issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely, as it is for most Americans.
And where do we go with this?
Well, we need Senator Obama to be President Obama. That's a beginning, actually. That's step one if we're really going to help make sure that all Americans have access to quality healthcare coverage.
How do we accomplish this beyond? I mean, right now you're talking to the choir. And most of our listeners are, you know, solid progressives, and many of them are dedicated Democrats and you know, progressive independents. How do those of us on this side of these issues reach out and inform the other side, particularly when we have organizations like Fox and others doing such a great job of demonizing us and demonizing and demagoguing these issues?
Well, one of the things I've heard, and I represent a very moderate district, and I hear from a lot of my constituents, and I think we hear this across the country, is that increasing numbers of Americans are saying, I have to pay more for my employer-based health coverage. I don't have the kind of coverage I need and want. Businesses are coming to us and saying, I can't afford it. So I think the way to do this is to say, our goal is to get health coverage to all Americans. We're not looking to completely disrupt the system, but we are looking to improve it, to be smarter about the way we provide care, to be able to make sure that we're providing quality. We're incentivizing efficiency, that we are actually getting the right kind of care to all Americans.
So
I think really what we want to say also, and I think this is what Senator Obama's talked about, and certainly I support this wholeheartedly, is that, look, if you're happy with your health coverage, you get to keep it.
Right.
And 55% of Americans get their health coverage through employers. They can keep it. The employers are fine with it, and the employees are fine with it. We're not looking to disrupt it. We're not looking to disrupt Medicare or CHIP, which I think has really worked so well. And we want Americans to have choices.
Right.
But you know, that said, we know that it is simply too expensive, and a lot of Americans need to have access to broader coverage, buy into big group policies like the federal employees. There are things we could do. We could be smarter about prevention. We could be smart in the way we deliver our health care to Americans. So let's say we're open to options. I think sometimes we think that the only way to do this is single payer. The only way to do this is a way another country's done it. We're going to come up with a uniquely American solution, and we should.
Yeah, well said. Congresswoman Allison Schwartz. Congresswoman, thank you for dropping by and talking
Absolutely.
With us today.
Absolutely. Good to be here. Enjoy the convention.
Is there a website that you'd refer people to? Is it house.gov/Schwartz?
Exactly. Yeah. And check out my work, and always appreciate hearing from folks.
Great. Thank you so much for dropping by. It's very nice to meet you. And I believe that John Podesta is going to be with us. John Podesta, the founder of the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, one of my favorite resources, one of my favorite people, great guy, John Podesta. John, you don't even need to use the headphones. Just, you know, we're live and on the air right now. So, John, you were on a panel yesterday that I was moderating, and you made some really good points. You want to reprise some of that stuff?
Well, I've just written this book called The Power of Progress, and it really focuses on the global challenges the country faces, but it goes back in history and it looks at the way progressives at the turn of the 20th century, activists, political leaders, people community leaders really came together and really built a progressive country. And that's what I think built out the middle class in this country, focusing on opportunity for everyone, focusing on the common good rather than special interests. Those values, I think, inform and empower the platform that's being presented here by the Obama-Biden ticket, and it's those values that I think are going to get the country moving again and get us the potential to really face these big issues of how do we restore our economy, make it work for working people, how do we deal with the energy crisis and the looming crisis that we face because of global warming, and how do we create a more sustainable security structure globally so that the United States has allies once again and abandons this preemptive war and unilateralism that got us into so much trouble in Iraq.
Yeah, give us the title again of your book.
It's called The Power of Progress.
And the subtitle is
how progressives can once again meet our challenge on the global economy, global energy, and global security.
That's great. I'm impressed that you're able to remember the subtitle. You know, because my publishers are always changing my subtitles and I get them all screwed up. The movement in the 20s, and really starting in the 1880s,
yeah.
I think we could agree, from the Wobblies, you know, the Joe Hill, the whole bit. Those movements were born out of times of great pain, and there was a media that acknowledged that pain. Even William Randolph Hearst, who was certainly an advocate of the oligarchs, acknowledged the pain. In fact, he used it to sell newspapers. Today, by and large, that pain is invisible.
Right.
We don't see, you know, you will not see network news. They might do a little fluff piece on somebody who lost their job or something, but nothing that really shows the big picture. How many, you know, what massive percentage of Americans are underwater in their mortgages, you know, that even would have had full equity in their homes, would have had them paid off by now back 30 years ago. And you know, the state of labor, it just is not happening. We've got to take back the media, too, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I think that's exactly right, Tom. To do a little history lesson, Teddy Roosevelt, when he ran on the Progressive Party ticket in 1912, supported the 8-hour day, the 6-day week, workers' compensation, work safety rules, a graduated income tax, an inheritance tax. He basically, the progressives of that era in both parties, were really fighting for social justice. They saw an economy that was really crushing working people, and they went about with ideas to try to build up, and you know, ultimately then joined with Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal to really build the institutions, the minimum wage, etc., that have created the great middle class in this country.
We're now
under the same pressure, and what we hear from the standard bearer who likes to say that my political hero is Teddy Roosevelt is the fundamentals of the economy are just fine.
Yeah,
you know,
John McCain.
John McCain didn't say that in January. He said it last week on Laura Ingraham's radio show.
Yeah. But the last generation of politicians, the last president who talked like this was Lyndon Johnson, in my opinion. You know, Jimmy Carter was prescient about the energy crisis and brilliant on it. But things were okay, you know, in America. The middle class, the strong middle class that Franklin Roosevelt created with the New Deal policies, was still largely intact. You know, Carter inherited some inflation problems that were the result of all the deficit spending for the Vietnam War, kind of working their way out of the economy. But you know, this whole stagflation thing, and of course the oil crisis of 72, whatever it was. But it's Teddy Kennedy, you know, last night his speech, you know, there's the grand old man talking about the issue. I don't think most Americans know that Teddy Kennedy for 30 years has been calling, saying health care should be a right, not a privilege.
Yeah.
And where are the major leaders in the Democratic Party who are speaking out strongly in favor of labor? I would argue that Bill Clinton actually did an awful lot to harm labor by pushing through NAFTA and CAFTA, or not CAFTA at the time, but NAFTA and the WTO and GATT. I mean, I guess we're reinventing it, aren't we?
Well, I think that's what this campaign has been about. It's been all about, you know, John Edwards argued this in the campaign, you know, his current problems notwithstanding. I think he was right about his analysis of the American economy, what was happening to poor people, the need to create, to make it easier to join a union by passing the Employee Free Choice Act. You know, those are issues that can be, I think, front and center once again. I mean, I take a little bit of an issue with you on the Clinton legacy. I think that there's, you know, the trade. Well, look, the trade thing is, you know, is certainly a mixed bag. But if you look at what happened to working people and what happened in the unionized workforce, I think the federal government tried to support unionization. I think that with respect to the 23 million jobs that were created, the wage growth that happened.
But Clinton wasn't thundering about the power.
But he wasn't
as Franklin Roosevelt did.
No, I would agree with that. I think his political analysis and his argument was about working people, but I think that he dealt with the political circumstances that he had, and a strong Republican Congress, and I think he moved the country forward.
Yeah.
I think the big lesson, again, to think about this historically a little bit, is that what characterized those early progressives was experimentation, reform. Try something. If it didn't work, try something else.
Yeah.
But always focus on the common good and opportunity for working people.
Well, that
and
that's got to
be our mantra. You know, I'm a product of it. I was so proud of Michelle Obama last night. I grew up. The book talks about this. I grew up. My father was a factory worker. My grandfather, all my grandparents were immigrants. My grandfather unloaded bananas off of railroad cars in Chicago. You know, I was the president's chief of staff. That's an extraordinary story. But it's an ordinary story, too, for millions of Americans. We need to make that same opportunity available to millions more and this new generation of Americans who are struggling so much.
Yeah, and John Podesta, that's the progressive movement. I mean,
exactly.
That is the movement. And John Podesta, the title of your book?
The Power of Progress.
The Power of Progress. Pick it up. I have not yet read it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks,
Tom. John Podesta, also, of course, AmericanProgress.org. Center for American Progress. Great work you're doing, John. Thanks so much for talking.
Thanks for having me on.
It is 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
By the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. You can find out more at Teamster.org. Yes, that's voter registration. And I don't know who's registered to vote. It makes sense. And by the way, tonight I'll be in here in Denver, actually in Lone Tree, Colorado, at the Park Meadows Mall, 6 o'clock, Borders Books. I'll be signing Actually, I think I'm going to be signing Cracking the Code, my most recent book, but there's 18 others there. We'll see how many they have. David Keith is with us. David Keith is the director of this...
I'm on the board.
On the board, I'm sorry.
The National Association to Protect Children.
The National Association to Protect Children. And, David, you're an actor?
I am. I'm most famous for having hung myself in Officer and a Gentleman many, many years ago.
Yeah, I thought you looked awful familiar.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen you in many things. And pleased to have you with us.
Thank you. Most
important, though, is what you're doing with us. This seems like a no-brainer. Barack Obama, yeah. Joe Biden, a bunch of Evan Bayh, Barbara Boxer, Casey, Clinton, Coleman. I mean, right across the board, a bunch of senators put together the Senate Bill 1738 that is designed to help protect children who have been kidnapped, who have been exploited into child pornography, who have been, their lives have been turned into hell, and missing and exploited children. And we've got Republicans, Tom Coburn specifically, filibustering this thing, or putting a hold on it.
Well, he hadn't filibustered it yet, but I'd love to see that. But basically the reason this bill is so crucial is law enforcement has software now that's identified the whereabouts of 750,000 Americans trading in child porn. They can investigate less than 2% of those leads, and 40% of the time that they actually get the subpoena and go to the door, 40% of the time there's a rape and tape in the basement and a child is rescued. 40%. So, and as far as kidnapping goes, only 4% of child molestation in the United States is stranger danger. 96% is the parents, family, inner circle of trust,
uncles,
making child pornography in this country a mom-and-pop cottage industry. But this bill, which started out as the Protect Act of 2007, is now the Child Rescue Act, because they've tweaked their hashes on the computer. Now they're discovering 28,000 new addresses a day
You know, makes me furious.
it does
crazy.
Everybody, and they're using it as a political football.
Yeah, and that's the part that makes me even crazier is that, you know, John McCain is not stepping up for this thing. Nobody's stepping up for this thing. Why not? What is the excuse that the Republicans are using to say they don't care about exploiting
Coburn
children?
Said to my face, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's not paid for, he's not letting it to the floor. So he's already said, and I quote, I don't care what it is. I'm not letting it to the floor unless it's paid for. Well, this is an authorization bill. The appropriation segment is next session, and we're prepared to do that. But you do it in sections that way. It's just, he knows that. He's put 83 holes on bills. And then Harry Reid, instead of keeping his promise to Ed Smart, Elizabeth Smart's mother, and taking this bill separately to the floor and just seeing if somebody had the balls to filibuster it, he's nidding. He took the whole, he made an omnibus bill of these 83 holes and tried to embarrass Coburn and the Republicans. They stood shoulder to shoulder and stopped him. And so Harry Reid's as much as fault as Coburn at the
you know,
point.
I'm furious with Harry Reid.
Me too.
Every step along the way. 2 years ago, Trent Lott got up and he said, "Okay, we've lost control of the Senate. We are going to block every meaningful effort at legislation." And then in 2008, we're going to run. And he said this in public. In 2008, we're going to run on a platform of a do nothing Congress, and they're doing it.
Yeah.
And it's not like Harry Reid doesn't know how this stuff works. It was done to him just a couple of years ago nuclear option stuff.
It's like
Bernie Sanders comes on the show every Friday, you know, the independent from Vermont, and he's like, why won't Harry? I mean, he's calling Harry Reid out. You got members of the Senate calling Harry Reid out on this, saying, okay, if you should say to these guys, okay, if you don't want to build and protect children, get a bucket and a hose and stand there for 14 hours like they used to do in the 50s, and you can have your filibuster. You can stand there all night and pee in the bucket and have people bring some food in for you, and when you pass out, you get another senator to take your place, but we're going to have a filibuster, damn it.
Right.
Why, you know, you just want to say to Harry Reid, political theater, buddy. It's like, I mean,
is he really a Democrat? I mean,
well, you know, let's not get into
because he said there was, and I don't remember the details. I hate talking about something I don't know the details, but I know that there was a bill that was anti-Bush or pro-Bush, and I can't remember which one it was, but I know what it was. It was a pro-Bush Bush bill. A Democrat put a hold on it. And Harry Reid said, the holes are just a courtesy, and I choose to not recognize this one. It's come, the bill's
I
coming through.
That. Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And Tom Coburn.
The
so
holes are not even
on.
In the Constitution. They're just a, it's a senatorial
it's a
courtesy.
Yeah, yeah, it's a parliamentary trick, basically, and,
yeah.
or technique or strategy. And here is you know, Tom Coburn using this thing.
Well, 250 to 300,000 children are being raped and taped right now
yeah.
in the United States,
and Harry,
in their homes.
And Harry Reid is just rolling over.
The blood's on their hands.
Well, and it goes, you know, and as I mean, you've got probably one of the perfect topics because it's so inflammatory, it's so hot, it's you know, and there are a whole spectrum of very real issues. I mean, we've got people in this country, we've got 40 million people who have no health care. You've got 17,000 people a year in the United States who are dying because they don't have health insurance.
Right.
You've got you know, elders who are not taking dying because they can't afford their medicines because, you know, they're eating dog food. I mean, right across, there's a whole spectrum of these issues. And we just, I think all of us, we need to be saying to the Democratic Party, not just get a spine. I mean, you know, get with the program here. Learn how this is done. Learn how, you know.
This is a perfect opportunity for the Democrats to have a red meat issue. I mean, the Republicans yeah. are always supposed to be the party of crime and punishment. Well, let's make Harry Reid tell Coburn to you know, that we're taking this issue over. I mean, yeah. This is a perfect opportunity to do it. If you go to protect.org, that's our website, protect.org. You can join for $35. You'll get an email every year with a hot button topic that you can just hit click on that topic. It sends an email. It'll give you phone numbers to call. It really will outline what the public can do to put pressure on the Senate to make this happen. It's a perfect opportunity for this Biden Obama child rescue legislation to be a plank in the presidential platform.
Yeah, and the bill is actually co-sponsored by Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And
Orrin Hatch.
Yeah. Amazing.
You know.
David Key, protect.org. David, yeah. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. From the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you in part by the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. There's 2 million members dedicated to creating justice for all American workers and their families. On the web at SEIU.org. Check it out. Well, breaking news, as they say, from the wire services. In what might be his most controversial attack ad in a campaign dominated by them, presumptive GOP presidential nominee John McCain today launched a new TV spot attacking Senator Barack Obama's two children. According to political insiders, a negative ad targeting a rival's offspring is highly unorthodox, especially when the children in question are under the age of 10. But after the two Obama kids scored in their performance on national television last night at the DNC, Senator McCain said today, "We had to do something to give the American people some straight talk on those two brats." In the ad, which is being broadcast in key swing states, an announcer intones, "They're the cutest children in the world, but are they ready to lead?" The spot uses visuals to link the two Obama kids to other famously cute kids, such as the young Drew Barrymore and the Cabbage Patch Dolls. The commercial goes on to blast the Obama children for smiling and giggling, but refusing to state their positions on offshore drilling. While some critics questioned how well the ad would play in living rooms across America, Senator McCain defended it, telling reporters, "Played very well in all of my living rooms." Yeah, as you might have figured out, from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. We're live here at the DNC, and take a break from our guests for just a few minutes, and let's pick back up with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Dylan in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Dylan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to thank you for discussing the cameras, but I think the bigger issue is the microphones. They seem to be kind of repeating the Dean scream back in Iowa, whereas the microphones are turned way up on the speaker but turned way down on the audience. So it sounds like they're talking to a group of three or four people. I was a Kerry delegate back in 2004, so I know these crowds are crazy. And it's most apparent when they have to stop speaking because the audience is so loud, and yet when you're sitting at home in your living room, it sounds like there's three or four people clapping.
Yeah.
Do you know
if
Fox News is controlling the cameras? Or, I mean, the microphones as well?
Yeah, they would be driving the audio as well as the video. So, you know, thanks, Roger Ailes, once again.
Dylan,
well said. Dylan, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Amazing. Kevin in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind? Kevin, you're on the air. Oh, I guess Kevin's no longer on the air. Let's go to Larry in Los Angeles. Hey, Larry.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great. I want to talk to you about something I've been wanting to say for really quite a long time, and it came up again when they were talking about the how the news is Fox News is covering the convention. And basically, what the idea I want to get across here is that there is no news, there is no media, corporate or otherwise. I hear you saying the corporate media. I'm here to suggest it simply doesn't exist and hasn't existed for more than 20 years.
Well, you've never heard me say the corporate news media because
no, corporate media.
There is no,
I understand.
There is no news media.
But
there is a media
in the
United States.
But it's still is misleading because there's only what I call RINOs, the Republican Information Network outlets. They're not in the business of informing anybody on anything.
Well, and the reason why is because the Republicans are the party of big business. And guess who owns most of the media in the United States? Big business.
They own the Republican information outlets. And my plea is for you and Randy Rhodes and Bobby Kennedy, I hear him saying it too, and Mike Malloy and everyone, to stop calling that this any kind of media or press, because it doesn't exist. And what I would like to see you guys do, and what I do, wherever I can, anybody who listens to me, is calling for and harping on the need for the press to be reinstated. That should be the big call.
See, the way to make that happen, Larry, is for us to go back to the Sherman Antitrust Act. I mean, what we have right now are monopolies, and it's not just in the media, by the way. It's right across the board. It's in every sector in this country, and that's where it's so destructive. And you know, let's have some competition. Let's break things back up. Sally in Twist, Washington. Hey, Sally, you thought the PBS coverage was good.
Hello.
Hi, Sally. You're on the air.
PBS.
Great.
I watched it for 3 hours last night, and there's no blather, there's no hype, there's no Fox. When Kennedy spoke, they panned to Maria Shriver, who was crying, and they showed Carolyn Kennedy, and they showed lots of women in the audience who were crying the same way I was. And when Michelle Obama spoke, they showed her mother, and I saw all of Jim Leach's, is that his name? I saw all of his speech. They showed the delegates.
That's great.
Shields and Brooks did the commentary, and they're civil to each other, and they're fairly intelligent. And then they had breaks with the historians like Beschloss, and it was great.
I watched PBS for probably the first half hour that I was watching it last night, and then you know I wanted to get my Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann fix, and so I moved
to
MSNBC.
But so much of that was, I mean, I love both of them, and I love MSNBC, and I hope that NBC does the Republican convention. Who's doing that?
They are. It's NBC is doing the Republican convention.
Well,
interestingly enough,
we'll get even.
At least according to Fox News, you got Roger Ailes, or you've got Bill O'Reilly out there saying that NBC is now biased.
Well, I know.
Sally,
that's
thanks.
The point. I mean, if we feel that, you know, that's sort of tit for tat, I suppose. I don't think either one's right, but you don't need to watch it. Watch PBS. Last night was great. All the speeches.
Okay.
All the faces in the crowd, all the crying you wanted to see, and it was very sensitive. It wasn't I mean, they showed people that were doing other stuff, but they showed all the people that you wanted to watch.
Yeah. Okay. Sally, thank you very much for your comments and for the call. Chuck in Southern California. Hey, Chuck.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the video last night. I watched the whole convention, and I feel it was very racist and very sexist. My impression was that the majority of the audience was older black women. Not the prettiest ones either. You know how they do a lot of headshots? My impression was that majority of the audience was black, and every time I saw a cute reaction on their face, they panned away from it very quickly instead of lingering. No pretty people were shown. Very few men were shown. You know, it was not 100%, but it was certainly a majority. I had the impression they're trying to create a picture of Obama's former church audience. That's what I got to say.
Yeah, I think that that's what they're trying to. That's what Fox was trying to do with the coverage. Is they're trying to say, you know, this is, you know, they're playing the race card basically, and they're doing it in a very, very subtle way. in my humble opinion. And I, as I said, I've done a reality check with a number of people on this thing. Was this just me? And two people who just without provocation, you know, without my encouraging them or you know, just came out and said this, were two African American women that I spoke with this morning. You know, one who I shared the bus with and one who is actually one of the engineers here, who said, her quote, this is a quote from an African American woman who this morning said to me, "Where were the blondes? I didn't see any blondes." And I thought, hey, that's interesting, you know, to hear that. Catherine in Los Angeles. Hey, Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hi. I agree with everything that's gone on before, but one thing I was thinking watching Michelle Obama, who I thought was wonderful, I thought, oh, would they please, the Republicans, please put Cindy McCain up and do a speech? Because I thought, oh, it would just be so embarrassing. And I could not see Cindy McCain doing the same kind of thing Michelle Obama did last night in any way, or, you know, it's just so we have class on our side.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Thank you very much, Catherine. Raymond in Miramar, Florida. Hey, Raymond.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Just great. What's up?
Tom, I just wanted to call a comment on the coverage last night. It was actually ridiculous to see how Fox was portraying the whole event. And I actually spent some time watching both MSC, C-SPAN, and Fox to see the difference between the three. And as much of your callers have said, and if you mentioned, there's really, really a problem with the media coverage in the United States today.
Yeah. Was it your sense also, like as I said earlier, it seemed to me that a disproportionate number of the cutaway shots that were provided by the Fox News feed, and this was... this has been mentioned to me by several African Americans this morning who I just met here, and also by my co-host on KPOJ, Carl. He pointed out that a lot of the majority of the cutaway shots were either bored people. If they were white, they were bored, and if they were enthusiastic, they were black. And it gave the impression that this was the audience that the audience here at the DNC, as another caller earlier said, was the audience at Reverend White's church or something like that. Did you get that sense, or am I just, like, out in outer space here, Raymond?
Yeah, you're absolutely true. That's exactly the same impression that I got. And I found it difficult to find people not engaged in the speeches that were going on, considering the content and how emotional, you know, the speeches were. So it was absolutely ridiculous to see.
Yeah, these were absolutely riveting speeches. And here's Michelle Obama just giving what is probably one of the best political speeches that's ever been given. I mean, not just by a spouse, but ever been given. And they're doing cutaway shots to people talking to each other. They're doing cutaway shots to people, you know, staring off at the ceiling. I mean, it's... 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. Congressman Peter DeFazio, one of the great progressives in the House of Representatives. Congressman from Oregon, he's going to be up with us next. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
A man who gives a damn about the man whose collar is blue. In fact, you're wearing a blue shirt today, Congressman Peter DeFazio. You know, Bernie Sanders once said to me, you know, I've known Bernie for years and I have so much admiration for him. He said, one of the very best, in fact, I think he might have said the best guy in the House of Representatives is Peter DeFazio. He's, I don't know if you realize what a fan you have in Bernie Sanders.
No, I miss Bern. We used to talk a little bit about the unique challenge of getting elected by good margins in my district, a district that Bush won two times in a row.
And it's much like Vermont. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go up in the Northeast Kingdom in Vermont. I lived in Vermont for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You go up in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and it's very much like your district. You see all the Bush bumper stickers and everything. Bush wins the Northeast Kingdom. I mean, he takes it. I mean, Vermont was almost competitive, and mostly because of the Northeast. And Bernie gets 80% of the vote up there.
Right. It just
which proves progressives can win.
Exactly.
So why doesn't somebody tell this to the leaders of the Democratic National Party?
You know, the DLC has been beating the drum for years that, you know, Democrats need to move to the center or to the right. And, you know, and I've been out there saying, no, actually people want, you know, real Democrats, and they want us to speak out forcefully on issues. And, yeah, there'll be a few times people aren't going to agree, but they'll say, well, I don't agree, but at least I know where you stand. It's not mush. And you're not there for the banks, and you're not there for the big oil companies, and you're not, you know, I mean, it's a long list of things that progressive populists can represent to the American people, which the American people are not stupid, and they know it's in their best interest.
It seems to me, Congressman DeFazio, that the leadership of the Democratic Party, I would say, it seemed to me that this started in 92. When Bill Clinton ran on a populist and progressive platform, and I'm amazed how I've seen history reinvented. I've actually seen pundits on TV talk about how, well, Bill Clinton in 92 ran as the guy from the middle, you know, which is total nonsense. It's horse pucky, or, you know,
sure.
I'm not sure what I can say on the radio.
It's all the pressure to try and, you know, squash the Democrats, conform to the corporate agenda.
He ran as a progressive, and 2 weeks before he was inaugurated, after he won as a progressive, you know, there's a famous story about how Robert Rubin and
told him the facts of life.
And Alan Greenspan sat him down and told him the facts of life, said,
right,
Bill, you're not going to govern the way that you campaign. And he became, I would say, to the right of Dwight Eisenhower. Dwight Eisenhower, I think, was a great president, and probably to the left of Bill Clinton in many regards. Not all, but in many regards. And it's like the Democratic Party, ever since then, has been just kind of frozen in this Bob Rubin state of we can't push back. And it's crystallized in the leadership of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. And I'm guessing you're probably loath to criticize your own, the leadership of the House. But what can we do?
You know, well, I think Nancy is much more progressive than that, and certainly look at her constituency.
Oh, and look at her voting history.
Right. The problem is governing with a relatively small majority. I mean, for instance, the fight over energy policy or the war. I mean, she has had to put tremendous energy into about, you know, maybe 20 Democrats in order to, you know, to get the votes we need. I mean, tremendous personal energy. That first go around where Bush vetoed the bill to set a timeline to get out of Iraq, or, you know, pushing through progressive energy policy last December, which was stopped by 41 Republican senators. You know, there is still a very dramatic difference between Republicans and Democrats, even the distilled version of Democrats that we've been governing by or under. But if we get a larger majority in the House and we get a few more senators, I think you'll find us moving in a much more progressive direction when, you know, all the votes aren't in question. I mean, you know, in part we're expanding our seats in the House with some pretty conservative Democrats, and God love them. I'm good friends with a bunch of them. But sometimes I'm going to disagree with them, and I would love to have 218 progressive votes and give them a bye every once in a while and move stuff, that way.
Well, this is Bernie's thing, is we need to don't just elect Democrats, elect progressives.
Right.
And unfortunately, there aren't any progressive Republicans, at least that I know of. Maybe you know of one, but we just have a minute
They've
to
They've been
to
stamping
wrap this
them
up.
Out.
Ron Suskind's new book makes it pretty clear that this administration has committed crimes. You know, we can debate all day long whether they raise to the level of impeachability. That's not going to happen. Are they going to be held accountable for these crimes after they leave office?
I certainly hope so. I hope we get a Justice Department again. We've been bereft of a Justice Department for 8 years. It's been politically manipulated. I think there's a lot of pent-up energy among the career people there. I think you're seeing some of it in these white-collar crime prosecutions, that's Ted Stevens and others, where they can bust out of the box.
We've got basically 4 weeks in Congress to use things like the Don Siegelman or Paul Minor cases or whatever to break open this stuff, to even arguably right now put Karl Rove in jail.
Well, we can't.
You think it's going to happen?
When you don't have a Justice Department that will enforce subpoenas. So
you guys can issue the subpoenas all day long, and the Bush administration just laughs.
I heard they cleaned out the basement of the Capitol, and we're thinking of bringing a few of those folks in there and So maybe we can put them in the new visitor center, lock them in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, because the jail isn't there anymore, is it?
Yeah,
they,
no,
they got remodeled out. That's a shame. That's a shame. We need to rebuild the jail.
Well, maybe there's a secret jail in the new visitor center. Maybe that's why it costs so much money.
There you go. 28 minutes past the hour. Congressman Peter DeFazio of Oregon. Thank you so much, Congressman.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for being here.
Always great talking with you. We'll be right back. 866-203-2270.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado. Governor Phil Bredesen. Did I say it right?
You said it.
Hey.
State of Tennessee.
Governor Phil Bredesen, governor of the state of Tennessee. And you, sir, were just reelected, the first governor in over a century to be reelected with all 95 counties in the state of Tennessee. That's mind-boggling.
I was indeed, and given how Republican the state has become, it made me feel very, very good.
Now, does that mean that you're Republican light, or does that mean that you've got a Democratic message that resonates with voters in Tennessee, regardless of their party affiliation?
Yeah, I think it's. I certainly wouldn't call myself Republican light. I think I've just tried to concentrate on things that I think resonate with people. Tennessee is full of a lot of people who, you know, that maybe their primary identification is not D or R.
Yeah.
They tend to be kind of conservative and particularly financial kinds of matters. I came in at a time when we had some huge financial crises and got them sorted out, and I think in part got rewarded for that.
That helps a lot.
It helps a lot. And
but see that, you know, I mean, that's what used to be. Well, you know, arguably, I guess it depends on the point in time, but. Fiscal conservatism is now the liberal position.
I understand.
Ever since Ronald Reagan. Reagan flipped this thing upside down, and he says, let's spend our children's future. It doesn't matter. We'll borrow from our grandchildren. We'll spend it now, make it look like it's a good time, and we'll call that trickle-down economics. Everybody gets to be a peon. You know,
people got a lot of common sense, and I just took the attitude with them. I just said, look, it's like a family's finances. You know, there's lots of billions of dollars instead of hundreds or thousands involved, but you got a certain amount coming in, and figure out, you know, use politics to figure out how you spend that, but stay within those numbers. And we've done it, you do that, and people wring their hands a little bit, but, you know, the state police still pick people up, and we still keep people in jail, and we still provide health care to people, and things just go along just fine.
The stuff the government's supposed to do.
Yep.
Yeah. Provide education, keep the streets clean, make, you know. Out of curiosity, what's the state of public water, public utilities, public power, things like that, are in Tennessee? Is it mostly community owned, or?
Well, it depends. First of all, with regard to power, most of Tennessee is on the TVA system, so that's a quasi public utility.
Right, this is Roosevelt's
creation, and then there's a most municipal power systems that distribute that power are publicly owned in some fashion. In Nashville, where I was mayor, that's a public. It's a public utility there. Gas is a little more complicated. There's some big public ones. There's also some private ones in the state. But on the whole, kind of a legacy of that Depression era approach to extending public utilities, particularly in a rural area, is still very much the case in Tennessee.
So the people of Tennessee still understand that government actually does some things right.
Oh yeah, I think I think there is a trust in government and a desire for them to, you know, tackle some of these kinds of problems. I don't think most people see it as the enemy.
Yeah, no, I don't want my shoes made by the government. I don't want my computer made by the government. But I want to know when I dial 911 that the guys on the other end aren't trying to figure out how to maximize the profit from the call.
Absolutely. Or when you turn the light on, you want to make sure that the planning is gone so that you're paying a reasonable rate for it and not some marginal thing because you messed up and tried to make some money at it.
Which we see with public power and
all the time.
And on the other hand, you know, Enron you know, one of the fractional Enron companies is now my power provider out in Portland, Oregon, and you know, I'm sorry, I'm not happy with you know, knowing that 10% of my electric bill every month is going to, as a dividend for stockholders, you know, whatever the percent is. It's absurd. These should be public utilities. What do you see as the big events that have happened so far here at the convention? What do you see going forward? What's really got you going? We're talking, by the way, Governor Phil Bredesen of Tennessee. He's recently reelected in 2006.
As
governor.
I thought the Michelle Obama speech was a significant event. I mean, if I look at Tennessee, I look at some states like that. I was up in Ohio for Obama at the end of last week. There's a lot of people still trying to get comfortable with the man. He's not, he's not been around a long time, so people have seen him in a lot of different kinds of situations. And I thought what she did was really move the ball forward a long way on that, just getting comfortable with them, with their family, with their values. And I thought it was a terrific start to the convention.
Well, you know, particularly at the same time that there's an underground whisper campaign going on the right. Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States, you know, this nonsense story, or he's a Muslim, and you know, and then, you know, going over to Kenya and digging up a half-brother who's a Muslim to try to put all that. I mean, there is this huge campaign to basically say that Barack and Michelle Obama are the other. And frankly, I don't think it would matter what the other was. I think if they were Hispanic, it would be a Hispanic other. If they were white, there would be something. You know, John Kerry was the guy who shot himself so he could get a Purple Heart. I mean, they figure out some way to demonize people. And what Michelle Obama did last night is she said, "I'm just like you." It was wonderful.
And she did a great job at it. And I think the next big step in this thing is, I think Hillary Clinton has got to project tonight a genuine, I mean, I think her, there's still a lot of issues there with people, and I think that if she really genuinely shows that she wants Senator Obama to win this election, she wants him to succeed, I think that's the final thing that we need to kind of get her supporters to come on board. And really,
I'm guessing a number of the delegates from your state are committed to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, they are. She won like 55-40, something like that.
So, in the media, in the corporate media here, we hear all about these Pumas and this revolt and all these, and yet I'm not finding them here. Have you had to sit down with any of the Clinton delegates from Tennessee and listen to stories about how angry they are, or are they, you know?
No, I haven't with the delegates, but I have to tell you, there's a lot of people out there. In the end,
I'm wondering how many of them were Republicans a year ago.
Well, you don't know the answer to that, but certainly, again, just speaking of the couple days I spent in Ohio last week, there's a lot of people who were very, very strong for Hillary Clinton, and they're still licking their wounds, and they're still sore about it, and we need to get over that.
Yeah, no, I understand, and I agree with that. It just seems like the organized campaign is mostly well-intentioned people who really and truly love Hillary Clinton and think that her candidacy was historic. And I, by the way, agree with all of that.
Right.
You know, in fact, I've on this show, right up until the day that Barack Obama won the nomination, I was not, you know, I was saying either one of these two people would make a great president. And up until the day Joe Biden was given the vice presidency, I said Hillary Clinton would make a great vice president. I think she brings a lot to this. And I want to see her as the Senate Majority Leader. I want somebody, you know, I think Harry Reid has wimped out one too many times, and I want somebody who knows how to take names and kick ass, and Hillary Clinton knows how to do that.
That's correct.
And
she has lots of people to help her.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I'm a fan. So anyway, I think that there's a lot of, well-intentioned and passionate people, but I also think that there's some serious manipulation going on by the Karl Rove elements in the right. And a lot of it, I can actually track back on the web.
Well, you know, there's been a whole, it's gone on for a long time now in the Republican Party, I think, of trying to lead by dividing, which I don't think is ever leadership. You know, just to try to divide the world into 51 and 49 and make sure you're on the 51 side. And I don't think that's what the country is about. I don't think that's what real leadership is. And what I think a lot of people are trying to do, what I try to do in Tennessee is, you know, as I think witness from what I've been able to do electorally, is to say, look, let's find some common ground. Yeah, there's probably something I'm never going to agree with somebody on the right about, some of these litmus test issues or something like that. But when it comes to creating jobs or moving the education system forward, so you can find some common ground. And that, to me, is what leadership is really about.
Make your lights go on when you flip the switch.
Exactly.
That's pretty straightforward stuff. We're talking with Governor Phil Bredesen of Tennessee, and one. I'm still boggled. How many? This has like got to be really rare that a governor wins literally every county, unless he's president of the voting machine company or something, which I'm sure you're not.
You know, no, I missed out on that opportunity. But
yeah.
Now there's the 95 counties, and it was good. I did great in the very, very heavily Democratic counties, and eked out some ones that had never voted Democratic for a governor. I think in history,
yeah.
I felt good about it. But again, I really think we were just talking about that. I really think it was due to this. I know it's not my great looks or something, but I think it's just that people are looking for somebody to lead by finding common ground, by finding things you can do together and move things forward, and not just trying to divide things up and make people enemies of each other.
Well, so we're going to take a break now. Governor Phil Bredesen has been with us of Tennessee. Is there a website for your? I guess just for Tennessee.
Just Tennessee.gov. There's lots of stuff, links to my own website and those kinds of things.
Great, Tennessee.gov. And Chris, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll come back with your calls. Governor, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
Great talking to you, too. I appreciate it. It's 44 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270, our number. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. AirAmerica.com for our video stream. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And David Sirota is with me. DavidSirota.com. Of course, the website is new book, The Uprising. And you need to get it and read it because it's all about the uprising. That's what's happening here. That's what's happening all across America. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just great. Great to have you here with us. And you can smile at the camera there. And all our viewers over at AirAmerica.com on our web vision, Tom Vision, whatever, can say hi.
It's pretty cool. Hello out there.
There you go. It's a hoot. So yesterday, the panel where I revealed that I'm a sexist.
Oh, no.
I was telling my listeners when I started the first hour, that is what, and I actually started to tell Ariana that, and Mark Green was like giving me the, don't take this topic any further, cut. That's what I was given hell to Chris Matthews for and everybody else in the corporate media with the Hillary coverage.
That's right.
And then I tell her that I like her perfume. I mean, what an idiot. In any case, it was a great panel. You did a great job, and you've been kind of roving reportering for us. What's going on here?
Well, there's a lot of excitement, and I think that there's a lot of buzz. I mean, I haven't been to a convention before, other than 1996 when I was a college kid and didn't really sort of know what these things are about. The Hillary Barack sort of nonsense is really nonsensical.
I've not been able to find a single disaffected Hillary Clinton supporter. I find people who say, yes, I was for Hillary. I'm still for Hillary. I would vote for her on the floor, but I'm not going to push it. I'm 100% with Barack Obama, too.
It's the people who I think are annoyed are the people who strapped or lashed their careers to Hillary Clinton, meaning really the inside of the insiders.
You mean the people who were hoping to get a job in the administration?
Yeah, exactly. So that's my sense. I mean, you got Howard Wolfson publishing an article in the New Republic. Howard Wolfson being Hillary Clinton's former top spokesperson,
right, the guy who wanted to be the press secretary or secretary of state or something.
Yeah, and saying that Barack Obama's job, one of his jobs during this convention, is to make amends with Bill Clinton. I mean, that is not one of Barack Obama's jobs in this convention.
If anything, it's the other way around.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, this idea that, and Wolfson said that the Obama campaign painted Bill Clinton as a racist, which is just so unbelievable. I mean, it's really unbelievable. So, other than that, about a convention like this, you know, I think it's what I found interesting is that I never knew what a party building, and in some cases I think now a movement building activity this is. I mean, one of the ways you build a movement is to build relationships among people. You know, email and the web, that's all good, fine and good, but you at some point got to get together.
Yeah.
Actually meet the people that you're working with. And I found that to be, as a progressive activist, I found that to be very, very valuable.
Yeah, and there's also the big annual convention put on by ourfuture.org.
Right.
You know, I'm forgetting the name.
Campaign for America's Future.
Yeah, but the name of the convention, conference.
Take Back America.
Take Back America.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And how could you forget?
Yeah, right.
It's been a long day. So number one, your number one story is that the...
Well, my number one story that I reported yesterday that I wrote about was about how that this Clinton-Obama thing, this sort of feud, is really a high-level feud, not really ideological,
mm-hmm.
and that the Clintons really need to just sort of exit stage right for a little bit.
Yeah.
Stage right.
I really think almost no matter what Hillary or Bill do tonight and tomorrow, that a week from now it's going to be forgotten.
I think that's right.
No matter what. I mean, if they do well, it'll be forgotten in a positive way, and Hillary Clinton can have the job that I want her to have, which is Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah.
Because I want a Senate Majority Leader who knows how to take names and kick ass.
Yeah,
she has demonstrated that ability, and Harry Reid has been, frankly, with regard to political theater, a miserable failure.
Well, I've heard the idea of Hillary Clinton carrying a health care bill. I think that would be
at the very least. I mean, that's you know, Ted Kennedy in 1980, I think it was 80, wasn't it? When he contested Carter.
Yes, right.
Yeah, 80. It was 80. When it was clear that he was not going to be president then, and probably was never going to be president, he essentially reinvented himself as the world's best senator, and he became that. I mean,
he
became, you know, not just one of the most powerful men in the Senate, but one of the most effective men in the Senate. I guess, you know, at a certain level, they go hand in hand. That's an opportunity for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree. I think it's a huge opportunity for her. And I think the other story of this campaign, this convention, I think, is that it's become very clear that the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, I think, has taken back the party. I mean, say again.
Thank God.
Yeah, right. I know. It's really, really an incredible thing. You get the sense, and I was on public radio yesterday with Chris Saliza, you know, mm-hmm. sort of a Washington Post reporter,
yeah.
who said, yeah, it's very clear that the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is now the Democratic Party. And I think that's really, really exciting. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Barack Obama is the greatest progressive. I think he's certainly a progressive. But it does mean that at the rank and file level, I think people are done with triangulating, done with Republican light. And I think that's really exciting.
You made a point yesterday in the panel that I'd love you to repeat. You know, it's a theme that all of my listeners are familiar with. I characterize it as the parade, you know. But in your words, you said it so eloquently, the whole idea of bottom-up
right.
political change. The political change never comes from some president waking up one morning and saying, gee, I think I'll pass civil rights legislation.
That's right. My column this week was about something called presidentialism.
Right.
That's a term from a Vanderbilt professor. He talks about the worship of the presidency as this savior that hands down change to the people. And it's really, that is not the way power works in this country. It never has. The way power works in this country is that grassroots activists and citizens change the political topography underneath politicians. So when a politician wakes up one morning, they're not handing down change. They're saying, you know what? It's politically safer for me to embrace change than for me to embrace the status quo. That's how it happens.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that politically safer part is only a consequence of us.
Only if you have to make it politically safer.
Right.
That's exactly right. If you don't make it politically safer, politicians are like water running downhill.
Yeah.
You've got to carve the channel to make it go in your direction when it rolls downhill.
Which means it's not enough to just vote.
Absolutely not. I mean, voting is voting is not even an act of activism. It's not. It's not an act of
it's
your
act
basic
of citizenship.
Exactly.
It's like it's sort of like, you know, breathing and drinking water. I mean, it's the essential stuff for homeostasis.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And David Sirota, davidsirota.com, his new book, The Uprising. It's brilliant. Buy it. Read it. And read his blogs and his posts and your nationally syndicated column, I suppose, his column, if it's the newspaper near you. And if it's not, call your newspaper and demand it.
Exactly.
David Sirota. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And thanks so much for listening today.
We'll be back tomorrow, live from the DNC again. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.